not here tonight, as he has been in the last two nights, to help us. And yet we have almost as large a crowd as we've had the past two services of this gospel meeting. And I want to commend you for your support and cooperation in the coming the way you have been in this gospel meeting. Everything's going along in the most pleasant way and enjoyable indeed to be here and working with you in this effort. As I think ahead on the topics that I'm to speak on tomorrow night, abortion, is it murder? And Friday night, the unpardonable sin, can we commit it today? I was wondering what I was thinking about when I decided to preach on those. Other topics, you know, are much easier. And I choose those. But I think those are subjects that people are interested in. And I feel need to be taught, discussed, investigated. And so we'll be looking into them tomorrow night and Friday night. Then Saturday evening, dangers facing the church. I'm going to be talking liberalism a little and radicalism, extremism in the church. And I think this thwarting the progress and the growth of the Lord's church by some of the notions and wild ideas that brethren have in various places that I've run into. Then Sunday morning, divorce and remarriage. And Sunday night, the sin of willful ignorance. This evening, we're concerned with the life of Daniel, some lessons that we can learn from this great prophet of God. I spoke on the Third Street Lectureship back in September, and this topic was assigned to me. And I enjoyed so much compiling the material and really delivering the lesson that I thought I would share it with you tonight. Daniel was an exilic prophet. That is, he was one of the captivity prophets. He was taken from his homeland of Palestine into Babylon by Nebuchadnezzar, the Babylonian king. And he was just a young man at the time. His name was changed from Daniel to Belshazzar. And this was a natural process to change the name of those who'd been taken captive. And so Daniel, whose name meant, or which meant God has judged, was changed to Belteshazzar, which probably meant protect his life, in honor of a pagan god. So here he is, away from home, in the very flower of his, the very beginning of his life, the budding of his life, where he stayed for scores of years to be an old man, living through two administrations. Two different kingdoms, from the Babylonian into the Medo-Persian. So let us look at some of the characteristics of this man's life and make some applications to our own life as Christians of God or disciples of Jesus Christ.
to suggest to you, first of all, Daniel was a man of preeminence. He was preeminent among the people of Judah. In Daniel 1, verses 3 and 4, the king spake unto Ananias, the master of the eunuch, that he should bring certain of the children of Israel and the king's seed and of the princes, children in whom was no blemish. That means he had no physical defect or deformity, like lameness or a crooked back or a dwarf or blindness, and well favored, suggesting he was a good-looking young man, teenager, probably 14, 15 years old, when he was taken from his homeland by Nebuchadnezzar, and skillful in all wisdom, indicating that he was an intelligent youngster. And Daniel and his companions were enrolled into a crash course of Babylonian culture, and for 3 years were given the equivalent of a liberal education in Babylonian literature, in chemistry, metallurgy, math, and religion. And Daniel studied many of these things in this three-year period, of which some are still with us today. So the Babylonians that introduced the sexagesimal way of counting in mathematics, here's where we get 60 seconds for a minute, 60 minutes for an hour, 360 degrees in a circle. Daniel studied math, no doubt, among the Babylonians. And in religion, he was introduced to all of the superstitions that characterized those people. So here is Daniel, a man who was attractive, a person who had no physical defects, and one who was very intelligent. So he was preeminent among the children of Israel. But secondly, in this connection, he was preeminent of the wise men of Babylon. In verses 17 through 21 of Daniel 1, the record states, "And for these four children, God gave them knowledge and skill in all learning and wisdom, and Daniel had understanding in all visions and dreams." Now notice in verse 20, "And in all matters of wisdom and understanding that the king inquired of them, he found them 10 times better than all the magicians and astrologers that were in all his or in his realm." Daniel was preeminent among these astrologers and magicians, superior to them, because God instilled in him wisdom and understanding. And I want to impress upon your minds tonight, brethren, that we need this kind of wisdom and understanding that comes from above to enable us to cope with the environment and the surrounding in which we find ourselves today. Daniel, in the midst of this, because of this wisdom, was able to make the right kind of decision. I hear Paul saying in Philippians chapter 1, verses 9 and 10, "That your love might abound in all knowledge and understanding, that you may be able to approve the things that are excellent, or determine the things that differ." That are decisions that we have to make as we sojourn through life. And this is especially true with young people as they come to the crossroads of life. as her faith with many philosophies and the wisdom of men. They have to be able to determine what's good and what's bad, what's proper and what's improper. What they must agree to and believe and stand on, and what they must reject. I can sympathize with them as they enroll in the universities of higher learning, as they drink at the fountain of human wisdom, that they have to make decisions. And in order for them to make the right decisions, they need to pray for wisdom above. The evolutionary theory, which has permeated many of the disciplines in our colleges and universities, you find it in humanities, it's in all the science courses, psychology, sociology, yea, even in religion. They have to cope with the problem. Here are the professors who are PhDs saying that we evolved from matter, that chemicals reacting up on one another produce life, spontaneous generation, and from this one cell animal evolved the complex man over a period of millions of years. What are they going to do about it? It's gotten so today that a man seeking a PhD in the science field has to be an advocate of materialistic evolution, organic evolution, before they will even approve of his getting his PhD. Dr. Burdick out in Southwest United States had a terrible time, a very difficult time in getting his PhD, because he didn't adhere to organic evolution. We need wisdom from God in order for us to make proper decisions. As I read in the book, it begins by saying, in the beginning, God created the heavens and earth. Starts with life. And that's a scientific approach. You see, science says that life comes from life. And when scientists begin delving into origins, they've left the field of science and gotten into the field of philosophy. There's not any empirical evidence, brethren, for the evolutionary theory. It's only a theory. And the late Sir Arthur Keith, a well-known British anthropologist, said that evolution is unproved and unprovable. Dr. G.A. Kirkup, who wrote the book Implications of Evolution, who's a professor at the University of Southampton in physiology, a PhD, and a well-known man in the educational circles in the field of science, said it's all built on assumptions. He's an evolutionist, but he said, I can prove it. Bible says God created. And that's what I believe. And that's where I stand. And to me, that's the only plausible position that one can really take. There's a matter of liberalism today, which operates on the basis of pragmatism. Now, pragmatism simply means what's workable at the time. If we come along here and we find something in religion that isn't workable, we don't think it has become obsolete in our way of thinking, let's discard it. Let's change the organization. Let's bring the church up to the 20th century. That's the philosophy of the liberal. They work on the basis of relativism, that nothing is absolute. I was in a class down at Western Kentucky University, and the professor said there's nothing that's unchangeable, nothing absolute. I asked him the question, I said, that one thing has to be according to your philosophy. What's that? That it's absolute and nothing's absolute. Isn't that right? Well, they are absolute. But we're being bombarded today with the idea that nothing is is really black or white. You can be sure what's right or wrong. It's a gray area. And you just determine what's the best for yourself. Now, Daniel was in the midst of all kinds of religious notions and ideas. Here were the astrologers. What effect the stars would have on the lives of men and women. Here were the religionists who said that there are genies, bad and good. You know, that's where the genie came from. Good genie, the bad genie. And Daniel was surrounded, according to the philosophy of the Babylonians, with all kinds of genies. But it didn't affect Daniel. Because Daniel got his wisdom from God and understanding. And friends, we need that too. In the midst of the dominational world who says one thing is good as another, we're all trying to go to heaven. I think our standards in some places are being lowered. We're saying, well, nobody can decide really what's right. We don't know all the truth. And so we embrace everybody. And all of us, you know, love one another because we're heaven bound. Let me impress upon your minds tonight, brethren, that God has revealed his mind in the Bible, and let's pray for wisdom and understanding and make ourselves put forth the effort to learn what the will of God is. Remember what Paul said? I pray that your love may abound more and more in knowledge and judgment, that you may approve the things that are excellent. That's what we need. Well, not only was Daniel a man of preeminence, but Daniel was a man of purpose. In verse 8 of Daniel 1, it says, but Daniel purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself with the portion of the king's meat, nor with the wine which he drank. This meat was eaten in honor of idol God. And Daniel, being a worshiper of Jehovah, the true God, could not engage in the eating of meat in honor of these false gods. So he just made up his mind. Now here he is a prisoner of war. A young man, a teenager, in the midst of a foreign land, that I purpose in my heart, I won't divide myself with a portion of the king's meat. So I drank the wine. Do you think, brethren, today, as we endeavor to live the Christian life, how we need to have a purpose fixed, a firm determination that we will not involve ourselves or engage in anything that would defile us in the sight of God. We need to have the courage today to say no to the allurements of this world. Daniel decided in his mind, as a young man, I will not defile myself. What an attitude today that among some of us is that when in Rome, do as the Romans do. With Daniel being in Babylon, do as the Babylonians do. Sometimes brothers say, well, I don't see anything wrong with taking a social drink at the Christmas party. And I don't see anything wrong with really going over to the prom. I'm not going to be a prude, an old fogey. I'm going over to the prom and I'm going to participate. I can sympathize with young folks. I mean, very long ago that I was a teenager. Not too long ago. And I have a teenage daughter, and I know what it is to be a teenager and what their desires are and so forth. But we don't have to go to some of those places. There are alternatives. There are things can be done. And we need to fix in our mind as a young person as a Christian that we're not going to go anywhere that would reflect up on the name of Christ. Do you hear me? I don't believe, brethren, that a Christian can go to the Christmas party, or to any party for that matter, and socially imbibe by taking a drink of alcoholic beverages. Peter says it's banqueting. And the word banqueting in 1 Peter chapter 4, verse 3 means to tipple, to drink not to excess. It's a drinking bout or a symposium. And that's exactly what one of these things is. Child of God just stays away from that. He doesn't know why. Or if he happens to be there because of some business he might be in or some reason or other, they might be there. He says, no, sir, I don't drink. Just don't drink. I'm a teetotaler. I don't indulge at all. And as a Christian, I don't go over to the dance hall and embrace the opposite sex, where lasciviousness may be aroused in my heart, which will send my soul to hell. You know, this word lasciviousness might be hard to pronounce, but it's a damning sin. Galatians chapter 5, Paul mentions some of these sexual sins, among them which is lasciviousness, and he says, they who practice that shall not inherit the kingdom of God, and I need to learn what lasciviousness is. And if I'm going to stay away from lasciviousness, I won't be out here on the back road parking and petting either. Won't be there. There never was an act of fornication committed until lasciviousness was committed first. Never a single instance did anybody commit adultery in the sight of God until the sin of lasciviousness was first committed. It's an unwanted desire, unbridled lust. It even involves the unchaste handling of male and female, according to their Greek English lexicon. It's indecent bodily movement. You take some of these modern dances with all the gyrations that they go through, why, friend, they have to be lascivious. Has to be lascivious. So a Christian fixes in his heart the determination that he's not going to commit sin. Not going to be done in justice. And that takes care of a lot of things, you know, who do that. We wouldn't be contributing to the United Front. Like some of them do. Well, now, for sure, let me tell you something. We're out of work. They want 100% participation. And I just throw in a little so I can get them off my back. But have you ever consider where that goes? Now, I think a lot of those works are admirable. I think they're outstanding projects in the community. To take care of the ill and the sick, and here's the heart fund and the cancer fund, and all those things, far as I know, are legitimate works. But what about some of the religious organizations that get their fingers into the till? And it's doled out to them, and here's the Catholic Church and the Salvation Army and the Jewish organization, and they get their share. Can I, as a Christian, contribute to those for their benefit? No, sir, not at all. So I have to say, I decline. I'm going to give mine to the heart corner. I'm going to give mine to the cancer fund. I think we all need to give to things like that. I think they're great. I'm not going to use one of them one of these days, you see. But I'm not going to give to a religious organization that's out here teaching things contrary to the teaching of my Savior. I'm not going to do that. Can't do that. And then if you're working in the bank, and the priest comes in and you say, good morning, Mr. So-and-so, what can I do for you? And he becomes rather indignant and says, don't you call me Mr., I'm Father. And you say, well, I'm sorry, sir, my religious conviction won't permit me to call you Father. He says, you're going to call me Father, I'm going back to the president of the bank and get you fired. Oh, excuse me, Father, I didn't. What are we going to do about that? Well, I'm going to stick with my guns. I'm going to call him Mr., which is a very dignified title, with respect. And if he won't do with that, if he won't accept that, then he'll just have to go back to the president and get me fired because I'm not going to compromise my principles. And Daniel purposed in his heart that he wasn't going to yield. And we need to have the same kind of purpose that we're not going to yield. and there's too much yielding on the part of Christians today and compromising principle in order to get along with everybody and not make them think I'm just a snake in the grass. I don't want anybody to think I'm no wet blanket preacher. And you know, in all this, Daniel wasn't rude. He wasn't a fanatic. He was a gentleman. But he stood with his conviction, with his determination. Brethren, we need to have a purpose in our mind that we're not going to engage in things that are sinful, that are wrong, that are questionable. We need that kind of people in the church of God today. Well, not only was he a man of purpose, but he was a man of principle, overlapping here somewhat. Here he is in a strange land, physical welfare at stake, but he wouldn't compromise truth and right. The pressure was to conform. The convenient thing was to give in, to go along. But Daniel wouldn't compromise. I was down in Kentucky back in September in a gospel meeting with Earl Robertson. He was telling me about a preacher, and I saw him one day in the restaurant. But he was a preacher that preached on Sunday, and he's on the radio every Sunday morning. He said, I tell you, ladies and gentlemen, he said, what's wrong with the church today? He says, people just compromise everything. That they compromise morals, and they compromise the church, and they compromise the gospel. And he said, you know what the basis of all of this compromise is? He said, it's ignorance. Now, Daniel was not, as the fellow said down in Kentucky, a compromiser. He wouldn't yield. He wouldn't back up. He had backbone. Too many of us today in the church and out have got a twine string for a backbone over in Washington, D.C. on down. Jellyfish, instead of men with great conviction who have principle about them, we're going to stand. Butler, who's a Christian church preacher, wrote a commentary on Daniel, did a good job on it. He said, for the believer in God, there are three areas of morality. Now look here what Daniel did. He refused to compromise on the matter of eating the king's meat and drinking his wine. And Butler said there are three areas of morality. Number one, that which is always right. Number two, that which is always wrong. And number three, that which is a matter of opinion. He said Daniel was called upon to act in all three realms. It's always right to be kind and courteous to one fellow man. Daniel did that. It's a matter of opinion about learning from the literature and culture of the world. Daniel did so, and you serve God much. It's always wrong to blaspheme God by worship of idols, and Daniel refused. So here was Daniel's neighbor, who in all three areas of morality stood by principle. He refused to take of the king's wine or to eat of the meat. Another thing where his principle was seen was that he refused the gifts of Belshazzar. Over here in the fifth chapter of Daniel, verse 13. Then was Daniel brought in before the king, and the king spake and said unto Daniel, art thou that Daniel which are of the children of the captives of Judah, whom the king my father brought out of Jewry? Look what he offered. I have heard of thee that thou canst make interpretation and dissolve doubt. Now if thou canst read the writing and make known to me the interpretation thereof, thou shalt be clothed with scarlet, have a chain of gold about thy neck, and shall be the third ruler in the kingdom. Look at Daniel's response to an offer like that. Verse 17, Daniel answered and said, let thy gift be to thyself, and give thy rewards to another. Yet I will read the writing unto the king, and make known to him the interpretation. I don't want your gift. I'm not interested in reward for what I have to do. I wasn't cruel to soothsayers among the Babylonians. Well, I'll say whatever you want to say. Belshazzar, if you give me so much, you just give it and I'll tell it. It's like you want to hear. Like the old boy went over in Texas. He just got out of college. He was a math professor, or a science professor. He was trying to get employed by one of the school systems over there in Texas. And they said, we want to know something. Back yonder years ago, he said, we want to know whether you teach if the earth is flat or round. Well, he wanted the job, needed the money. He scratched his head just a minute. He said, I'll tell you. He said, I can teach it any way you want. You know, there's a lot of us like that when it comes to preaching. We can preach it any way people want it if the pay's right. Daniel said, I don't want your reward. I don't want what you have to offer. I'm going to tell you the interpretation anyway. Friend, that should be the attitude of every gospel preacher. I'm going to preach the gospel whether I get a dime or not. I heard the story of old brother J.D. Tank years ago. I guess about anything you hear on his soul. But Tank never did make any money, just about starved to death. He wasn't a very good organizer. If it hadn't been for his wife, I guess he would have starved. But Tank was approached one time about what all of the denominational preachers, all the denominational preachers were making in comparison to what he was making. Why, he said, Tank, he said, you just changed a little bit here and there. He said, look what you have. But you'd have a good salary every year and a nice place to live and all that. Tank looked right back and said, I'll tell you right now. He said, before I'd preach the doctrine of faith preaching, I would shave my head and set on buzzard eggs for a living. Now, friend, that'd be hard out. But he said, I'll do it. Well, I remember what Samuel said back in 1 Samuel chapter 12 and verse 3. He said, have I taken your donkey? Have I taken your ox? Have I received bribes and told the things that they shouldn't tell? No. I haven't looked the other way and taken bribes. You know that. I hear Paul saying in Acts 20 and verse 33, he said, I coveted no man's gold or silver or pearl. You remember when the apostle Peter was standing before Simon the sorcerer, when Simon offered him money that he could have this gift as well as the other, Peter said, thy money's perishable. I can just hear some of these mercenaries say that now, Simon, walk on, son. You're just a piece of metal angry right now that I'll fix you up right for the price. You just think what a lot of these preachers today are making. While they're riding around in Cadillacs, two or three, they have the finest of homes. Well, you take old Moon. Old so-called Reverend Moon, who claims to be Jesus. People are worshiping him all over the country. Why, he's got more money than he knows what to do. Here's Leroy Jenkins over yonder at Delaware, Ohio, who has a mansion to live in, Cadillacs to drive around in. Thousands of dollars. You're talking about a wreck. But Daniel wasn't that kind of man, and neither should any preacher today be a mercenary. So here was the second thing he didn't compromise principles. One, he didn't eat the king's meat. Number two, he didn't take reward for what he had to say. He was going to tell him what God said. He was going to interpret it just like it is. And the third thing, he refused to obey the king's decree. Now that comes right down from the top. You look in chapter 6. It pleased Darius to set over the kingdom 120 princes, which should be over the whole kingdom, and over these three presidents of whom Daniel was first. Now look at verse 4. Here's Daniel's position. Verse 4 says, then the presidents and princes sought to find occasion against Daniel concerning the kingdom. They were jealous. They were rivals of Daniel. And what can we do? Well, we know about his God. So we'll find the occasion against this Daniel so that we can bring charge against him. And they went to the king and they got a petition and said, if any man asks a petition, verse 7, of any god or man for 30 days, save of thee, O king, he shall be cast into the den of lions. Now, friend, I'd had to have thought about that for a while, probably. Why, I might have said, now, Lord, I believe you can do about my worship for about 30 days. Have you considered the consequences? Well, I'm going to be cast into the den of lions if I call on you, Lord. And so I'll just back off here for about 30 days, and then I'll start praying again. That isn't what Daniel did. Look at it. Verse 10 says, now when Daniel knew that the writing was signed, he went into his house, and his windows being opened in his chamber towards Jerusalem, he kneeled upon his knees 3 times a day and prayed and gave thanks before his God as he did aforetime. You know the rest of the story, that he was cast into the lion's den. But here was a man of principle. And I would to God that everybody would have principle and backbone and conviction that we can stand up for that which is right. Now let's look a little further. The time's getting away from it. He was also a man of good. Now look right here in the same chapter, in chapter 6 of Daniel. They couldn't find a thing in the world wrong with him. Verse 4. They sought to find occasion against Daniel concerning the kingdom, but they could find none occasion nor fault, for as much as he was faithful, neither was there any error or fault found in him. Daniel was a man of fidelity. He was a man of integrity. He was a man of honesty in all of his dealings with the kingdom in the position that he occupied. They couldn't find a flaw in all of his administration. He was a man of truth. You just think what we've got in Washington, D.C. Some of our representatives are disgraced. Here was a thing. Wayne Hayes, fiasco. We, as taxpayers, paying for a secretary that wasn't doing the job of secretarial work, what was acting as his mistress. There was the representative Wilbur Mills from Arkansas and his affair with Fanny Buck. And these are just some that have come to the light. I'm sure that there are many more. And you can't believe many of them what they take. I'll tell you one thing to get your vote and do just the opposite behind your back. And I'm losing confidence in the representative, my representative, my senator, our senators in Washington, D.C. I'm just about as bad anymore as so far. He said, I'll tell you right now. He said, if a politician told me he was lying, I wouldn't believe it. You think about that for just a little bit. Now that by no means says that every politician is a crook. We got some honorable men, good judges, good lawyers, good representatives, good senators, wherever they function in state, federal, or where. We got some good men. But we got some we need to put out the pasture. The only way I know to do it is go to the polls when voting time comes around and just turn them out. I heard Paul Harvey some time ago. He said, are we expecting more out of our representatives, out of our governmental officials than we expect of ourselves? What do you think about that? Sometimes we want people to be perfectly represented, but we want to go on and do just anything we please. Well, friend, we need to turn this country around. We need politicians. You know, Daniel was a politician. Daniel was a statesman. But he was a man who had integrity. He was a man who had purity. He was a man who had fidelity. And we get that kind of individual in Washington, D.C., we wouldn't have any more Watergate. We wouldn't have the bribes and the kickback in government. We'd have men that could be trusted and believed, and that's what I want. I don't care if you're a Democrat or Republican. I want somebody I can believe. I might not agree. agree with everything that he stands for, but I'll tell you right now, I'll take one I believe that's fruitful over any man that's a crook.
If he doesn't stand for my philosophy of government, I'd rather have one tell me the truth than one who's a crook. And we need integrity in government. I wonder sometimes how much longer God's going to let this whole country stay. You know that of the 22 civilizations that have existed on the face of the earth, 19 of them have already fallen when they got to the moral state we are today. You ever think about that? 19 of the 22 fell when they got to the place we are today. That was a statement by the great historian Thomas. Daniel was a man of purity, and I like what Butler said. He said here was Daniel, who was taken a prisoner of war. He was requested by a pagan despot to study pagan literature and science and be trained to serve in a pagan court surrounded by luxury, sensuality, lust, self-seeking, idolatry, and ruthless cruelty. But Butler says in the middle of this, there grew up this fair flower of a character, pure, true, holy, and stainless, by the acknowledgement of enemies, and in which not even accusers could find a fault. I don't know any situation, brother, in which it's right to be dishonest. I don't care what relationship we're in, what situation we find ourselves, I don't know the time it's right to be dishonest. That's why probably a Christian can never be a member of the CIA or an FBI agent. Because you've got to lie. And I don't believe a Christian can lie. And you've got to commit, on occasion, immoral acts, covert and clandestine acts, in order to promote it. And I don't believe a Christian can be a part of that if he has to engage in those kinds of activities. I believe that we can be a member of government. I don't agree with some brethren. You can't even vote. You can't be a judge. I believe what we need are judges with integrity. What we need in Charleston, West Virginia, are politicians with integrity and unity. And that's true over in Washington, D.C. And I believe Daniel is a demonstration that you can be high in government and still live for God and do the job that ought to be done. Now, my time is coming, John. Don't quit right here just a moment. But Daniel was a man of prayer. He found power in prayer, and he prayed every day, three times a day, looking for Jerusalem. And he kneeled in prayer and prayed to God. Daniel 6 and verse 10, Daniel chapter 9. Daniel was a man with a contrite heart who felt the compunction of conscience, and sins weighed heavy up on his heart. And he prayed to God to remove those, give him strength. Daniel was a man of prayer, and we need the same today as we endeavor to live. Christ. And finally, Daniel was a man of power. He served two administrations. Nebuchadnezzar made him a ruler in his government. Chapter 2 of Daniel, verses 48-49, made him a ruler over the whole province of Babylon. And then when the Babylonian Empire passed out of existence, in the Medo-Persian Empire, Darius appointed Daniel one of the top echelon cabinet members of president. And he was the number one president of the priests over these governments. Somebody said, oh, preacher, you know, religion and politics won't mix. And this is Daniel's day. And he let his religion regulate his politics. And it will today. And I wish that every senator and every representative and even the president of our country would read the book of Daniel and take it to heart.